toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. Most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Tristan Fidler.
And my name is Simon Morato.
This is the official RTRFM podcast where we share our weekly edition of Movie Chat, as heard on Breakfast with Taylor every Friday morning, 7:30 a.m. on RTRFM. We cover new cinema releases and new streaming releases. Whenever a movie is released, we'll review it. And this episode, we're talking about two titans of cinema. We're talking Channing Tatum and Jim Broadbent.
Now, isn't that the pairing for Magic Mike XXXL that we need?
I can see, you know, I mean, I can't think of a film. Has there been a film with Jim Broadbent's done an American accent? There must have been.
Oh, there must have been.
But I can't think of it off the top of my head. But yeah, he could be Mike's dad. He could be Mike's grandpa. I don't know. Like, we will figure out a way to have Jim Broadbent in the Magic Mike universe.
He could be the werewolf from True Blood's brother. I think it's Joe Manganiello.
Yeah, of course. So, yeah, we're talking about two films that, you know, sadly do not star them both, but we can only hope and pray that the universe will deliver. But first, you know, well, we're looking at a film starring Jim Broadbent called The Duke, Simon, which you reviewed.
That's right. That comes out in a couple of weeks, but we're getting in early. And it's based on a true story, co-stars Helen Mirren, and is the final film from director Roger Michell, who we talk about in our review as well. But first up, Tristan, what are we covering?
Well, yeah, we talk about Channing Tatum, star and producer of the Magic Mike movies, 21 and 22 Jump Street. But he's come back with a movie that he's co-directed called Dog, which is about an army ranger who has to transport a retired military dog. And yeah, we get into it. So this is some audio from the film Dog.
It's expired, sir.
Come on, man. You know how many times I've been in and out of this gate with that?
Excuse me?
What's the odds I'm ISIS?
Step out of the vehicle, sir.
You want me to step out of the vehicle? I'll have him.
He's with Ranger Battalion.
Ranger Battalion. I've been busting my ass to get my mind and my body back into a good place.
I need to get back in the game, sir.
You want to get back in the game? Prove it. Sergeant Rodriguez was a legend.
Family funeral Sunday outside of Nogales.
They want his dog at the funeral. You do this, and you're back in the game.
She won't work with anyone. One minute she's good, the next minute she's sending three guys to the ER.
What's up, dog?
And you're gonna go on a little road trip.
Easy.
What are y'all so scared of? Smell it out, big time.
What is your deal, man?
Maybe just take the crazy down one notch.
Hey! No, 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 no!
Just after 7:30, Friday morning, time to make some space for your movie squad. Back at it again, Tristan and Simon, good morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
Lovely to have you folks back on the radio. Tristan, we're going to dive straight in with a film that I'm not sure if I'm actually anticipating. I'm looking forward to hearing all about it. Let's talk Dog.
Dog. Well, this is interesting. A great way to start things out. Taylor, can I dig into a bit more? Is it because it's a film about dogs or because it stars and is co-directed by Channing Tatum?
Look, I think it's just the premise to me does not appeal.
Sure.
I don't have any issues with Channing Tatum. I actually think he's quite funny.
Yeah.
And I don't have any issues with the dogs. I feel like I should clarify that this
Taylor morning. Is a dog person. Let's kibosh the rumors. Well, I mean, Simon, are you a fan of Channing Tatum? Do you hold him in much high regard?
I remember in the early days of being a cruel young film critic, when I saw, I think it was the first G.I. Joe, I wrote that Channing Tatum had the charisma of a talking hat stand.
Whoa.
And this was more of a reaction to, like, he was meant to be the next big thing. Mm. And then, obviously, you saw more of his range in certainly comedies as well.
Yeah.
And I realized I was in the wrong. I can own that. And I do really like him a lot. And it's been a few years since he's actually starred in a movie. I think he consciously took some time off. So I actually am quite intrigued by Dog, not least of all because he's the co-director or the director of the film.
Yeah, he's a co-director.
Yeah, so I think he's definitely earned his stripes and young Simon was proven to be extremely incorrect. He is a very charismatic and I think fun presence in movies.
Yeah, and this... Yeah, it's co-directed with Reed Carl Carlin, who is a collaborator who's produced some of his other films and wrote Magic Mike and has worked with him previously. So I think it's definitely, there's a period of time where, yeah, Channing Tatum was the next big thing and was starring in lots of different movies, but I think over time he made a conscious decision to be in more things that he was kind of interested in working with in terms of directors, and then also like, yeah, things like Magic Mike, which was, you know, kind of based on his own early past as a male dancer. And this is, yeah, it's basically, I think, follows a little bit in the kind of style of Magic Mike, or Magic Mike XXL, in that it's also a road movie. It's basically a road movie where Channing Tatum plays a kind of a U.S. Army Ranger named Jackson. He's finished his service and he's kind of working in a quasi subway, but he's looking for redeployment. He wants to be back in action, even though he has passed the medical, but he needs kind of the okay from a senior official. So in order for this to happen, he's tasked with a classic premise that serves many a movie, is that he has to deliver Lulu to the funeral of their handler in 5 days. So Lulu is a Belgian Shepherd military dog who is kind of on the cusp of retirement, and their handler, who was also Channing Tatum's character's best friend, has died, had a car crash. So, yeah, the family has requested that the personal effects of this fallen soldier and this dog be present at the funeral. And since the dog is not one to be messed with, since it's still a ferocious beast, they assume that someone who knows the dog will be able to handle it. So that's the premise of the movie. It's basically a road movie with Channing Tatum hanging out with a dog. And yeah, like your interest in this will really depend on your tolerance for that. For like, if you're a dog person, if you're a fan of Channing Tatum, since as opposed to something like 21 or 22 Jump Street, it's not him sharing the screen with like a funny improviser like Jonah Hill. It's just him and a dog. So
are you saying Lulu sticks to the script completely?
Well,
she respects the director's vision.
I guess Turner and Hooch would be a comparison in that you're watching one actor just have to react to a dog. I don't know if it's quite as funny as Turner and Hooch, but there's a similar sense that the dog is a bit of a destructive nightmare for the first half of the film. But as they go along their journey, they get to know each other, get to reconnect. And to me, this kind of put me in the mindset of a Clint Eastwood movie, like the kind of thing that he would have directed either in the 70s in terms of a wacky hangout movie like Every Which Way But Loose, or one of his more recent movies like The Mule or something like that, where it's kind of just like a road movie across America. It's, you know, it's indebted to exploring PTSD in terms of soldiers. So it rides a line of jingoistic kind of, you know, it's not quite patriotic, but it's a little bit, you know, it is support the troops in that way. So people will, you know, I think, will, you know, depends on how they feel about that in terms of whether they enjoy the movie. But it's also just ambles along. There are kind of weird set pieces, some which are funny, some of which are weird, some of which involve kind of a few guest stars here and there, including Bill Burr, who shows up as a cop at one point, Kevin Nash, a co-star from Magic Mike, and Jane Addams as a kind of pot-dealing couple. You know, it's they got that quality of the road movie in terms of meeting different characters and different stories. In the end, I did enjoy Dog. It's very traditional, it's very obvious, but it still worked on me. I was still kind of crying when it wanted me to cry. And I'm not much of a dog person either, as my partner will attest to. So I was won over by Dog, but I feel like this is a movie that some people will really enjoy and others will kind of just like not really get it. And I can understand that. So, I mean, from that description, Simon, are you further down to see this, or is it has it cooled your?
I know I will definitely see this movie. Yeah. I just want to touch on something. Did you say that Kevin Nash and Jane Addams play a couple in this film?
Quite a pairing. Right. If people don't know, Kevin Nash was a wrestler.
Yes, that's right. And Jane Addams is sort of the Morticia Addams-esque indie actress who appeared in Todd Solondz's Happiness. So that in itself is a side that I want to behold. But again, I do really like, even if this wasn't about him with a dog. I think Channing Tatum is a fun presence on screen. I do like seeing him. I like the first Magic Mike, and I really liked what they did with Magic Mike XXL, and apparently the stage show is even better. So I do like his and Reed Carolyn's collaborations. But, you know, Taylor, I don't know if you have this same question that I do, but as a director, how does it differ from his collaborations with Steven Soderbergh, which he's done, you know, three or four of?
Well, one thing I could definitely say is that, it's not as, I wouldn't say as funny or as engaging as a Magic Mike or the, but it's in that kind of observational kind of road movie mindset. And the fact is that they're working with some great collaborators. I mean, Newton Thomas Siegel is the cinematographer, very experienced, and makes, beautiful images out of the kind of the destinations that they cover. And then Thomas Newman, classic composer, is providing the score. And then it's a road movie, so there's obvious sing-along songs where Channing Tatum's in the car singing along to The Gambler or to The Lion Sleeps Tonight. So it's both obvious but also effective in that way. I mean, so I found it more interesting than something else, like another kind of actor-producer. I haven't seen The Adam Project with Ryan Reynolds, but that's something that feels like it's kind of being made for the four quadrant audience, and it's kind of, this one is just a bit more simple and a bit more character based. So I kind of like that as opposed to being a kind of franchise weirdness thing. I don't know, Taylor, does this sell it to you?
Have you
anymore?
Been converted?
Do you know, I feel like I actually kind of have been. It's the beauty of Movie Squad. You come in and you give me your honest opinion.
Yeah.
So it lets my, what's the word?
Prejudice?
It lets my prejudice.
Your guard down.
Yeah, let my guard down. I feel like this is a film that I would see with my mum. She is a huge Channing Tatum fan, probably for different reasons than I am. But that's okay. Road trip films are great. They're fun. Like you said, they're pretty simple and you know what's going to happen. So I think that maybe I have been converted this week.
And speaking of mums, shout out to Liz. My mother has seen this movie and loved it, so there's another recommendation. And I think it's definitely even though it's kind of dealing with a bit of sad material in terms of PTSD and stuff, it is a feel good road movie. I think people will enjoy its simplicity as opposed to trying to wrestle their head around some weird time travel device or another superhero movie. So, but it does have weird, odd touches as well, so I won't say that it's a completely fail-safe fun time. But yeah, Dog out in cinemas now.
Well, maybe next week we got to get Liz, Karen Strano, and Carla Morado in to share the mother's perspective on
We've
Dog.
We've all been replaced.
Will the defendant please stand? Kempton Bunton, you were charged that on the 21st of March 1961, you stole from the National Gallery a priceless portrait of the Duke of Wellington by Francisco Jose de Goya.
Not very good, is it?
We're convinced that the Goya has been stolen by a highly professional international criminal gang.
Mind your boomers!
Almost certainly a trained commando.
You're right.
Bit of biscuit.
One problem.
What's that?
Your mother. I can explain.
I'm shaken.
It's the shock.
Shock, yes, I'm shocked there's a stolen masterpiece in my wardrobe.
For our second cut this week, we're having a look at The Duke.
The Duke, that's right. We're getting in a bit early with this one, but also a bit late because it did play the British Film Festival late last year. It arrives in cinemas proper on the 31st of March or the... Anyway.
Yeah, 31st.
End of this month. But we're taking a bye that week. That's the day of the RTRFM 45 Greatest WA Songs Countdown. So I thought we'll get in early, put it on your radar, The Duke. It's the latest, well, actually, it's the final film, the newest and final film from British director Roger Michell, who has a long history of sort of crowd pleasers, interesting dramas, plays on his resume. Probably best known, though, for directing Venus, the Peter O'Toole film, for which he was nominated for an Oscar most recently. And then Notting Hill, which is one of my all-time favourite rom-coms. I think it's a cut above some of the other Richard Curtis films of that era. Tristan, Taylor, I don't know how you feel about Notting Hill.
Yeah, it's great. I haven't really committed much thought to it, I'm going to say.
You should be committing thought to it, because I think it's a very thoughtful movie, Tristan.
Yeah, no, look, Notting Hill, I like it. But he also was responsible for a very underrated film, Morning Glory, with Rachel McAdams as a television
That's
producer.
That's underrated, is it?
Well, I think that all good movies should hinge on a climax where Harrison Ford cooks a frittata on air, which that film does.
But that was a good film.
Oh my God, I can't believe I'm getting... Well, I didn't think I'd be getting more love for Morning Glory than Notting Hill on the air. But such is, let that be a testament to the late Roger Michell. But The Duke is his final film and sees him working like in his milieu. You know, he did make a variety of films on a variety of topics, but this is absolutely a crowd pleaser, sort of a traditional British comedy, but it is based on a true story and centres on the interesting character Kempton Bunton, who's played here by Jim Broadbent. He was something of a rabble-rouser in the late 50s and early 60s. Effectively, a man who always looked out for the little guy. He would, you know, create public disorder, create petitions, try and meet with MPs. And when we meet him at the top of this film, he is particularly, you know, the bee in his bonnet is that pensioners and veterans shouldn't have to pay their license fees to watch the BBC in the UK. So he's got a very small scale protest about this. He refuses to pay the license fee himself. And all of this is much to the consternation of his wife, who's played, wife Dorothy, played by Helen Mirren in the movie. Now, you get a bit of Helen Mirren, not a whole lot, and I don't even think she leaves the set of the house in which they preside. So this is very much the Jim Broadbent show. But he's really affable. He's obviously very fun and compelling screen presence. And as Kempton Bunton, he's got this great foil to play. But the story of the Duke centres on the time in which Kempton Bunton became a household name in the UK. And it begins when he's sort of... I guess a bit upset, frankly, that the UK government spends £140,000 on getting a Francisco Goya painting of the Duke, effectively, into London. And he goes, well, that money should have been spent on the pensioners and veterans of the UK that could pay for so many license fees. So as the film tells it, he steals the painting. He hires this 140K, you know, and an incredibly famous and revered painting, and holds the UK government to ransom, saying they should pay the license fees for the OAPs. Now, let's not say it's a spoiler that eventually he fronts up to court and has to speak on his actions, but that's where the film really comes alive. To a degree, I was disappointed it came so late in the film because this is when finally Kempton Bunton has basically the ears of the world and he has his soapbox and he definitely makes a meal of it. And that's where, again, the movie falls into the cliches of legal dramas, you know, somewhat cloying but heartwarming films where people get to make long speeches and it's all about, you know, doing the right thing and standing up for those who can't speak. But it really happened, and part of the issue with the UK government during this time and the case against him was that Kempton Bunton was just so effective at getting people onto his side that once he did have a mass audience, he really was able to convert them. So we won't go into more spoilers. There are plenty of stings in the tail of this story, and there are a couple of twists that Roger Michell and his screenwriters do kind of bury. That did take me by surprise because I didn't really know this story widely. But Tristan, how do you feel about, or are you looking forward to The Duke? Because again, films that play the British Film Festival starring Jim Broadbent and Helen Mirren, they can sometimes be a bit MOR, you know, and maybe feel like something we've seen a million times before.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. I wasn't really paying attention to what this film was about, and I did see it kind of as part of the British Film Festival program, and then it would just kind of collapse in my mind with other films that would either star Bill Nye or Timothy Spall, and it's kind of, you know, it seems like, look, there's a thriving industry in television and film in the UK, but it definitely feels like there's more films, you know, featuring these three actors than any others possibly. But yeah, I was really, when I heard about the actual story that it was based on, that sounded more interesting to me than maybe a fictional story about someone in their midlife crisis or later life crisis. And Yeah, I think it's compelling because these issues, I mean, it's specifically focused in the UK and about a very specific thing in terms of the license of BBC television, but in terms of elderly rights, veteran rights, I mean, these are still ongoing issues, particularly here in Australia. So it's interesting to see this kind of, I guess, I assume that it's in the more crowd-pleasing tone of Roger Michell's career than something like Enduring Love or Changing Lanes. But I mean, I was curious as to whether the tone was going to be a bit more kind of upbeat and fun, or if it was, there were serious dramatic moments in this as well.
No, totally. And it's great you bring up Changing Lanes. I forgot he directed that, the Ben Affleck, Sam Jackson film. That is underrated. And yeah, it definitely is in the frothier comedic vein. But there is a bit of like, spunk to it, you know, and this the theft of the painting was actually referenced in, I think it may be Dr. No, but one of the early Sean Connery Bond films. Like, there's sort of a winking joke to it that we see in this movie. And there is some style where it feels like, you know, those early 60s kinds of movies, you know, the films that Edgar Wright tries to ape. It does have, you know, quite a nice pace to it, and it definitely is a, like I say, a frothier kind of film. But it does deal with semi-serious subject matter, and there is, you know, some revelations about the Bunton's home life that kind of inform why he gets these bees in his bonnet. But ultimately, it's just an enjoyable 90-minute romp, and it doesn't really engage with the idea of, or let's say, it doesn't criticize per se the idea of spending money on art, because this was going into it, I was like, all right, is this going to be a film that argues there shouldn't be money spent on bringing cultural artifacts into a nation, you know, for the benefit of the public? Because I think there is a benefit to spending money on art, obviously, as part of the Atiyar family, but it is hard to argue with Kempton Bunton's particular causes. So, yeah, it's a film that will have a certain type of viewer standing in their seat cheering at the end, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. Taylor, is this what you look for in a Jim Broadbent film? Is this the kind of mode you like Jim Broadbent?
I like that you bring that up, because I don't think I've seen Jim Broadbent in a film since, like, maybe Harry Potter or Bridget Jones's Diary.
Yeah, wow.
Where he plays the dad. And I loved him in those films. So, yes, I think that this film, based on what you have told us this morning, is, like, wonderful. I love the premise to this, and I definitely want to see it. I also love any film, like we mentioned, sort of the legal or the court route, somebody who gets to have their day in court on film and like these big heartfelt emotional speeches. I'm here to be moved, so I'm definitely going to check out The Duke.
Nice one. I also should say there's a bunch of very famous and recognisable British actors who pop up throughout, including Matthew Good as his lawyer, and he gets to make a meal out of some speeches as well, some real, like, hoorah kind of, not patriotic speeches, but standing up for the little guy speeches. So The Duke, it's not out yet. You got to wait a couple of weeks, but it will be in cinemas by March 31st. And yeah, you kind of know if you're going to like it or not, but if it wasn't on your radar, go and check out the trailer. Don't read too much into the background of the story, because the movie is set up and semi-established like an Ocean's film, where they go, well, here's how it actually happened. So I would hate for that to be spoiled for you going in.
Well, there you go. We've reviewed it a little bit early at the time of recording, but, you know, you might be listening to this later on. So The Duke comes out in cinemas March 31st, but I'm sure will be available in streaming platforms or direct-to-video after that. The same with Dog, whenever you're hearing this. But it was good to reflect on, Roger Michell, who I guess is a director. I would say you classify him as a journeyman director. Like, you'd always kind of show up and move across from the UK to Hollywood. But I was just like looking at some of his, I've not seen Venus. So it was just funny that was the first movie that you went to.
Well, I said Venus first because I was going to go in at length on Notting Hill.
Yeah.
But then it was redirected to Morning Glory.
Well, and then, yeah, Changing Lanes, which is a film that I haven't seen in a long time, but I remember liking at the time. And
I like that type of movie.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think we see many of those these days.
Kind of like, you know, ordinary people having a bad day that just keeps escalating.
Yeah.
So that's one to check out. The other movie that is one to see based on an Ewan McEwan novel, is Enduring Love with Daniel Craig and
Marisa Fons.
Yeah, that is a very curious movie about a certain type of stalking. The other films he's made, I haven't quite seen, but one to explore the back catalogue if you've not already seen films like Notting Hill, Morning Glory, and Hyde Park at the Hudson. I never saw that one.
No, and that's probably not one you need to see. And I haven't seen it either. Yeah. But it's kind of a sad thing, I guess, where you reflect on the great directors. And I don't think just because Roger Michel has passed away, sadly, that he now enters that pantheon. But it does give you a chance to say, all right, let's look at a filmography here. Yeah. And you've got a guy who has a lot of three and a half, four-star movies, or movies that you've long since forgotten or ignored or didn't realize he directed.
And it gives
you the chance to go, oh, wow, he put together a career, you know, and an interesting and varied career, and was working right up until the end, and in fact directed a couple of NT Live productions. You know, the theatrical productions that get screened in cinemas. So obviously a talented guy, obviously an interesting career, and at least two or three movies there that you go, oh, wow, he contributed something that gave me a great Friday night, or in the case of Notting Hill, one of the great rom-coms.
I mean, look, I know that sometimes you say it best when you say nothing at all, but I think sometimes you say it best when you say what you just said as a tribute to the career of Roger Michel, and that's where we're going to end the episode. But yeah, Notting Hill, I did rewatch that, I think, last year, and enjoyed it all over again, even when it's, you know, putting on a Ronan Keating song onto the soundtrack, it's still enjoyable.
It still has a lengthy ending to Elvis Costello's She. Come on, that's great.
What a soundtrack. Definitely check out. Oh, I'm sure everyone's already seen. Has anyone not seen Notting Hill? I mean, it's, anyway. Look, it's been great talking about these movies with you, Simon, and I look forward to doing it next time on the next episode of the Movie Squad podcast.
Absolutely.